solarandheating.com. Stay tuned to KHSU. Coming up next is Thursday Night Talk.
And that stirring death metal theme song lets us know that this is Thursday Night Talk. Good evening. I'm Kevin Hoover, the host of Last Resort and editor-at-large of the Mad River Union newspaper. We're going to talk about food tonight, and we have some lovely folks here to do it who are going to treat you to a big movie, which is coming up. Food advocacy has taken a cinematic turn of late with movies like Food, Inc., What the Health, I think that's the vegan one, and Food Evolution, a new one with Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, promoting various types of food reform. This week sees the local debut of Locally Grown, America's Food Revolution, a film about agricultural subsistence and resistance, about food justice and food sovereignty, about good food and good work in Humboldt County. A free screening of this film takes place this Saturday, August 19th at 4 p.m. in the Native Forum at Humboldt State University. It's hosted by the Humboldt Food Policy Council. The screening will include a film discussion and tables with information about local food resources for students and the community. As I said, it is free, and it is for all ages. So tonight we're going to discuss Locally Grown, America's Food Revolution, with local food activist and co-executive producer Suzanne Simpson. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi, Kevin.
Humboldt State Associate Professor of Communication, Dr. Joshua Fry.
Hi, Kevin.
And Assistant Professor of Social Work, Jen McGuire.
It's great to be here tonight.
And you, the listener, with your calls to 707-826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. So, yeah, Locally Grown, America's Food Revolution. What's it all about? Suzanne Simpson.
Well, as some of you may know, some of the listeners, I am one of the co-authors of the book Locally Delicious and Lunchbox Envy, and our... I like to say our old lady group of Locally Delicious wrote those books.
The Heirloom Tomatoes.
Right. And a couple of years ago, I got to thinking about what could we do next? And I have a film background. I actually was a filmmaker 40 years ago, if you can believe it. And I thought, God, it would be really great to make a film about food sovereignty and some of the things that we're doing in this region here. And so that's basically how it got started. I went up to the dean, Dean Rhea Williamson, when she was here, and I suggested that we work as a team because I know they have a great film department here. And she pulled in David Shearer, who is a very well-known national documentary filmmaker or director. And that's how it all started.
That's how it all started. And the film is, I believe it's 30 minutes long?
It's 27 and some odd seconds. It's okay. For, you know, PBS timing.
Ah, so it's assimilable. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a three-hour War and Peace type thing. So it says here in the press release, it says, according to Joshua Fry, we're really interested in modeling the process so others can emulate it. Are we presenting Humboldt as a model of all these goals and ideals?
I guess that's my cue. We are. And I think that the evolution of how the film should be scripted, which is where I kind of came into the conversation after the food policy summit in 2016, is that what Humboldt County is doing with its community food system is incredibly unique and progressive. And so... How could we harness the success stories of what growers, cultivators, retailers, co-ops, consumers, marketers, distributors are doing here in this part of the country and weave together this inspiring narrative so that folks around the continent could be uplifted by how one rural community is reimagining itself in the wake of all of this hullabaloo about food sustainability. And so that's, you know, where we really started thinking about how those narratives should be framed in terms of what themes, what tone. And I think we all collaboratively concluded that we really wanted to feature what Humboldt County is doing as a success story. Not that we don't have a lot of barriers and gaps still in place in terms of equity and environment, but that what we are doing compared to so many places around the country is really pretty progressive and inspiring.
Now, just as a layperson and obviously a food consumer, I mean, I can just kind of look at the surface off the top of my head. I can name all kinds of things that other communities may or may not have. I mean, Arcadis Farmers Market, I don't know. It's probably not the biggest, but for in terms of vibrancy, and it sure is. It's got it going on. So there's the farmers market. We have a very nice network of community-supported agriculture farms. We have, Arcata has the Foodworks building out there, an incubator, which has been wildly successful in spawning all kinds of different food enterprises. What else do we have? What other assets do we have?
Well, we have the bay.
The bay.
And it is, I heard that it is the cleanest bay on the West Coast. And we did, one of our segments was on Sebastian Elright, the oyster grower. Excuse me. And he did a beautiful piece on oysters and how to grow oysters, and it's different. And he considers himself a farmer, which I think is really fantastic.
Yeah, well, they're cultivating and harvesting, right? So,
right.
And they're, so do I understand that I'm trying to find it in my masses of literature from your website? Website, like apparently the film itself, the website's very professionally composed. But if I understand, there are some vignettes or little micro profiles of any number of variety of food producers?
There will be. We're almost finished with a trailer, and yes, and then the film will be able to be sold probably in the next few months.
Okay. Does that mean it'll go into, when say sold, it'll go into it'll, distribution
yes,
of some sort?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Could it even be televised?
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, not every county has our assets, or not every bioregion. Yeah. I mean, we have this unique climate. We have the ability to have farms and aquaculture and other things. So I guess any community that tried to achieve something similar would probably want to, what would they do? They would want to sort of make an assessment first of their assets.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think we are unique, but what I see is that every community has some sort of assets that they can use that could begin to educate people about how to eat healthy, how to create equitable resources. Like with our food bank, we have a huge number of farmers that donate food. As an example, Locally Delicious for the last 9 years has, with our book sales, we have donated close to $100,000 in partnership with other people to the food bank, and the farmers have been able to grow over 100,000 pounds of food to give to the people that are hungry.
So you're getting some of the institutions to interrelate to each other. For example, your food advocacy group is selling
right.
a book, which is raising money, with which you're infusing to the food bank, which in turn, okay, so more
yes.
relationships. Jen, what is your what's been your role in the creation of the film?
I think I came in, thanks for asking, and I think I came into this more along the lines thinking about equity for community food. And we have so much good food in this community. And as you know, the food isn't always equitably distributed. It oftentimes can be for the economic elite who can afford to shop at, you know, more expensive stores. And so part of why I came into this is, you know, we need to be thinking about healthy food for all people. And there are some amazing partnerships that Suzanne referred to in terms of thinking about the food pantry, so the food for people. And they were actually really instrumental in helping us get our food pantry started here on campus, OSNAP campus food programs. And they helped us figure out there's, you know, so many students who are here right now, and you think students that their food might be covered by, say, financial aid and that or scholarships, and that there would be enough money for them. But there's a lot of food insecurity that's happening for students, and we recognized that it was a real issue for our students, and nationally, this is something that we're thinking about what is the quality of life for students as they pursue their dreams of an education. And so we look to Food for People to help us get a food pantry started for emergency food. And immediately, you know, as we also joined in with the Humboldt Food Policy Council, we started talking to other partners, and the North Coast Growers Association got involved in terms of helping us think, how could we get more students to farmers markets and able to participate in buying some of the local food and local agricultural products, and being able to afford them. And and then we also were able to partner with Earthly Edibles, and they came into the picture. They grow some great fruit and bring it into our students here on campus. And it's just been, I mean, the partnerships have really grown. And I think this film is really about those partners coming together and thinking about, you know, thinking about the environment. We're all thinking about how we grow food, healthy food for everyone, and how can we help revitalize this community.
Well, we definitely don't want the students going to class hangry.
No, we don't.
Or eating exclusively Mountain Dew and Doritos. We want everybody to have a good, well-balanced diet. So, you mentioned barriers and gaps in our embarrassment of riches that we have food. What would be some of those? Oh, by the way, 826-4805. Call in with comments and questions if you have them. So, Josh, barriers and gaps. What seems like we have foodtopia kind of here, but no?
Right. Yeah. I've lived in a lot of places around the world and studied food systems. And what Susan Jen are talking about with these collaborative relationships in our community is one of the features that we really need to build on. Just thinking about barriers in the near future, sea level rise is certainly something that's facing a lot of coastal communities. And as we've seen from a lot of social, scientific, and government-funded research, even in the last decade now, that the agriculture sector around the world has been dramatically affected in adverse ways by climate change consequences. So in terms of a real discrete barrier that's going to be facing our community in the probably next half a century, sea level rise is going to be a major barrier to tackle in terms of infrastructure, in terms of collaborative thinking about distribution channels, for instance, of things, and in terms of as economically as possible, kind of redesigning things that will impact our food system. Like the infrastructure is just one small example for distribution purposes, but there will be other effects too that we're going to have to creatively and collaboratively identify, interpret, analyze, decode, and think through together. And there's more and more funding that's going into these types of research agendas. And that's one of the things that we hope to do with this project as we continue to expand it, is bring it to as many different audiences as possible and use it as a public education and environmental communication outreach tool, not only to showcase Humboldt County's unique growing economy, but also to sort of get people to think a little bit more proactively and critically about what is happening in their local communities, equity in labor within the agriculture sector is something that's been gaining a little bit more attention in the public discourse in recent history, and in California in particular, it certainly is an issue that has some resonance with itinerants and potentially undocumented farm laborers. So those are a couple of examples of some of the barriers, and then gaps might be things like infrastructure imagination, design, how much social trust exists in the community, how much support for leadership and reliability within the leadership, collaborative efficacy of different sectors. And so I'm hoping, and this is what's been one of the most exciting things for me is joining this team, is cross-sectorially and inter-institutionally to kind of think about how we can work together toward solving some of these pretty big challenges that we're going to be facing in the near future. And I think agriculture, in my research and experience, is one of the best ways to sort of hone in on the intersection of a lot of these different variables. It affects us economically, it affects us socioculturally, it affects us in terms of our identities and our traditions and our communal rituals. It affects us politically in terms of our policies at the local, regional, state, and national and international levels. So, you know, food is a great way to kind of start to get into some of these really pretty wicked problems that we need to be thinking about together effectively in order to move forward as a society.
826-4805. This is Thursday Night Talk. We're talking about the new film Locally Grown, America's New Food Revolution, with Josh Fry, Suzanne Simpson, and Jen McGuire. 826-4805. Food is something that it is. It's a linchpin. Obviously, it's essential, and it's a key to so many other questions in terms of, gosh, everything. I mean, everything. And yet we just take it for granted. I'm wondering what the motivation is for some communities, you know, that don't necessarily have all the great food infrastructure that we have here, to change anything. I mean, they can just go to the store and buy stuff, right? And so why would they, you know, do the heavy lift to basically start from scratch a food activist culture? Anyone?
Well, I guess I will take that. I feel very positive about what's going on in this country. And for one thing, in major cities, there are a lot of gardens that people are doing, community gardens. And there is a growing interest in healthy food. I mean, there's Organic Gardening Magazine, Mother Earth News. Those are all very, very popular. And I think that people are becoming educated, and especially families that have young children want to be able to feed their kids healthy organic food, but in many cases it's they can't afford to do it. And so that is one of the problems that, you know, I think that we have. And when we have more gardens in cities and people can get their hands in the dirt and grow their own food, then you're going to have more success, and that will cut the edge off. It's basically having to relearn what is important and how important food is to our bodies, to our souls, to our families, and to the community. And this is just something that I think people are going to, they're going to love this film, I think, because it is a gateway into making change. And also, I'd like to speak about the website, which is, I think, really beautifully done. And we had a great web designer. It was Justine?
Justine Cook.
Justine Cook. And Josh and Jen and Noah Zerbe, May Patino, and myself all wrote different aspects of a food guide on how communities can do this. So the web is not just about pretty pictures, but it's about how can communities make change. And I think these two, Josh and Jen, could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, your website is quite a resource. It's got all kinds of sections here. I'm looking at them: education, cultural, how to get started, about, establish. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the different components of it.
Well, I'll just jump in there and talk about a little bit. Hi, and a little bit about why I think this is important too, because you were touching on that. And I think, you know, why might communities want to be interested into becoming food activists and being engaged with their own food producers and growers? And I just know, like, as a parent, for me, And for our own families, like, food is so important, and knowing where your food comes from is. And in this culture where we actually don't know where much of our food is coming from, and but we do know these long-term health impacts in terms of how long we can live and what the quality of our lives are going to look like, that it's critical to have this connection to food, to know how you grow it, to know where it comes from, to be able to go and talk to the sales people who are not the sales, the producers of the food, and know what's going into that food. And this film talks about this. It's like, this is the resources of our environment that makes this food, that makes this bread, that makes these oysters. This is where it comes from, and having an idea about what this means for your long-term health and being able to put it into the bodies of my children and know that I might somehow be limiting the impact of, you know, negative health effects from so much of this bad, or I should say conventional food that we all have access to, that we can just go to the store and pick up at any time. And so in terms of developing this website, it was really came out of the space of like, you know, well, what do you do? How do you get involved in a food system? How do you become a food activist? How do you do policy advocacy? How do you support your local growers and producers? And what are ways we can do that? And so I believe different parts of the website start to engage users of the website about what they can do next in their community.
I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second. Yeah. 826-4805, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment. About 12 years ago, the Arcata Eye did a whole series on local school food. And I'm not going to name any names because I think the schools have changed now. But one school district, basically, they had just gotten a $38,000 grant to redo their kitchen at one of the local elementary schools. It was gleaming. The only thing they used it for was to heat up, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, Uncrustables. It's these manufactured pseudo peanut butter jelly sandwiches. They're like a little, kind of like an empanada, but it's just peanut butter jelly. They're made in Ohio, and they're shipped. The kids were complaining that they were frozen. The other school district was baking its own bread, grinding its own peanut butter, composting it, everything, and taking orders in the morning, and you could have a complete meal in the afternoon, and of course, a real peanut butter sandwich. Mm-hmm. But these Uncrustables, to me, that was the embodiment of stupid food. So you had this factory-made peanut butter jelly sandwich from Ohio that's frozen when the kids are trying to eat it. And I just thought, yeah, something's wrong. And so one country or one school district was basically a model of how you do it. The other one's basically with its Cisco trucks. And another one of their popular food items. Well, actually, one of the girls did a science project on this. I don't know what it was. It was a faux Mexican food thing, like a fake burrito. It was the most repulsive thing. All the students wouldn't eat it. She did a science project on what was everything disgusting about it. It was pretty funny. I looked at the ingredients, and five of the first six ingredients in this meat were a form of sugar. There was sugar, there was dextrose, there was, hydrogenated whatever. Anyway, it was terrible. So it would be probably, when you look at America's health and obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes and all the other things that affect longevity and health, food is at the heart of it. So that might be some motivation for some of these communities that don't have local food resources to look at your film. And I'm hoping we can talk about the three E's.
Well, one thing that I would like to say as an example, United Indian Health Service, and I was hoping that we could have somebody come to talk about this here on tonight, but nobody was available. They have Potawatomi Gardens, which is, I believe, well over 5 acres, and they grow fruit and vegetables almost year-round, because they do have greenhouses. And the amazing thing is that they have farmers markets, and they specifically help people that have diabetes and children. They have all these programs to teach people how to eat healthy. And it's coming right out of our land, you know, the land that we all know and feel and smell and touch and eat from. And so I think this is one really amazing example of that. Another example, they have started doing gardens in, I think it is either 7 or 9 other areas within the tribal area here. And Blue Lake, Casino actually has a very large garden now, and so they are providing healthy food for their customers. And also, and this is in the film, they also have home delivery to seniors in all of Blue Lake. So I think there is this huge movement coming, you know, where people want their kids to be healthy. They want them to eat healthy food. And seniors, you know, that are at home housebound, they're now able to eat some of these wonderful things. So I think there is, I think we're showing how it can be done. And I know that other communities around the United States are doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea for all kinds of enterprises to have a little garden. I mean, you could even do that at a business. You could have a little garden out there, and it seems like a good thing to do during lunchtime. What seems like a no-brainer is schools. They should all have gardens. Why don't they have gardens? I mean, that's an educational component. How are we doing with that? Do the local schools have gardens?
Well, I can speak specifically to my children's school. They go to Coastal Grove Elementary here in Arcata, and they have a phenomenal food program, and they do have gardens, 4-H gardens, where they are teaching the children. But the school has a partnership, and I'm not sure exactly which farmer it is, but brings local produce to the table for students, and they have salad every day, and they have quinoa and millet and rice for their snacks. And I was talking to the principal the other day, and one of the things she was saying is since they implemented this food program, because it was a big leap to go from, you know, federally subsidized food programs to a local food program, and there were a lot of questions about how they were going to support this. And when they made the switch and, you know, charged families that could afford it food for the food and free lunches for those who couldn't, there was enough money. And what she's found is it's been had a profound impact on, and this is just her speaking anecdotally, but on the school in terms of the amount of behavior issues that are coming up, and that students have been much more able to, you know, to focus, you know, students having less trouble with conflict with each other. And she said it's just been the most amazing intervention. And she's been a principal there for many, many years. So that seems like one good example.
When I was a kid, many, many, many centuries ago, we didn't have any garden. In fact, I was raised on canned food and frozen type food.
Still alive.
I know. And I wonder sometimes how I survived that. But I mean, to me, when I was a kid, I wanted canned green beans because I felt like they had been handled and processed. I didn't want to think of anything like dirt on my food or bugs crawling on it. You know, I was so separated from the reality of food. I just wanted it all to be artificial. I mean, I used to live on Swanson turkey and Mexican TV dinners. I was perfectly happy with that. I started for salad, no way. I mean, but I've come around full circle. Now I'm kind of like the opposite, although I still like some junky things. We do have a call. Yeah, and you too can be a caller, 826-4805. But for now, let's talk to Liz in Arcata. Welcome, Liz, to Thursday Night Talk.
Hey, thank you. Your guests are excellent, and I really
aren't
appreciate
they, though?
All their
They're
information.
They're just so effervescent. Sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead, Liz.
I just wondered if any of the guests are familiar with Ron Finley project. He's known as the Gangsta Gardener in South Central L.A., and if so, if they would just let people know a little bit about what he does.
Gangsta Gardener. So let me guess. He establishes community gardens in communities that don't have anything like that, urban communities?
Yes, yes. And he's actually going to be a speaker in the HSU Speakers Series this year. I'm not doing a plug for that necessarily, but in February he's going to be here.
Plug it. So when is that?
He's going to be here in February at Center Arts.
Okay.
It was one of their speakers. But if any of the guests are familiar with him, if they would... You know,
I don't think they
connect,
are. But you can tell us about it. So here's someone who takes a challenging situation or urban setting and manages to create a food resource there?
Absolutely, yeah. And anyone who wants to look up Ron Finley Project, it's very inspiring.
Can you spell that out?
Finley is, it's Ron, and then Finley is
F-I-N-L,
I believe it's E-Y.
Okay. And that's Gangsta Gardens?
It's EY. Mm-hmm. the Gangsta Gardener.
You know, Liz, I haven't heard of this particular project, but I'm wondering if it's a spinoff of guerrilla gardening in that movement.
I have to say I'm not super familiar with it, but you know, the genesis of his project, but you know, it certainly ties into community gardens here, and is, you know, offering a resource and a way for people in the urban setting, especially in some of the lower socioeconomic areas, to have access to good food, to learn how to grow food, to get their hands in the dirt, to be connected to their food. So
that's wonderful.
Thank all of you for all the work and for the show, Kevin.
Well, thank you, Liz. And thanks for calling in. So why don't you be like Liz? Call Thursday Night Talk with your question or comment. Because we're here discussing a wonderful new film, which is called, Suzanne?
Locally Delicious, America's Food Revolution.
Hooray! We're here with Josh Fry, Suzanne Simpson, and Jen McGuire. And we're talking about this lovely new film, which is debuting. Is this actually the debut, or is this the first local showing? Or?
Well, basically, it is the debut. And this is going to be at 4 o'clock at the Native Forum, which is in the BSS building in HSU, which is way at the top.
Yeah, the big building at the top of the hill.
The big building.
Yeah. The Native Forum is right by the street there. Yes. So, yeah, there's ample parking.
And it's not just only the film, but we're having a panel discussion and a community discussion. And Josh and Jen are part of that team. And so it's again, we're going to be talking about how people can do this, why it's important, and to motivate everybody to start thinking about making their own changes, whether it's, you know, a little garden at home or in flower boxes or taking a large piece of property and going for it.
We decided that a slow launch would be a good way to go nationally, to sort of seed different pockets of the country and the cultural milieu into this kind of project and the work that we're doing here in Humboldt. So I know Jen showed it this summer at a conference in Tennessee, was it?
Yeah, it was in Tennessee, and it was a conference on rural social workers and human service researchers. And so it was really well received, and there was a lot of excitement about thinking about, you know, food sovereignty in terms of knowing where your food comes from and being able to grow it and not necessarily being dependent upon, you know, big corporations to deliver food that you don't necessarily have control over. So,
And I screened it this summer at Occidental College in L.A., at a conference on interdisciplinary community of food studies scholars, and it was really well received. And then also on the East Coast at this Dartmouth Environmental Leadership Academy that I was helping to direct for 2 weeks to actually a group of 45 high school aged students. It was a pre-college residential program. And so we decided nationally it would be nice to kind of just organically start to, with all of our different networks, start up the conversation and show the film. And then locally, I think we decided we really wanted to have more of a dramatic and kind of pointed release in a series of events so people could see what great work everybody's been up to.
So see, Saturday you can get up and go to the farmer's market, and then you can go to the Creamery Festival, and then you can go to the Native Forum at 4 o'clock, and you can see Locally Grown America's New Food Revolution. And if you miss it Saturday, You can see it at the Minor Theater, downtown Arcata, film screening and dialogue. That's Saturday, September 23rd, and that'll be a wine and cheese gala opening. I imagine some of that food might be local.
All of it will be local.
At 7 p.m., $20 to benefit Locally Delicious. And we have this just in to the KHSU newsroom, Ron Finley lecture, Tuesday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at the Van Duzer. It's right downstairs here. The self-proclaimed Gangsta Gardener. Thank you, Liz, for letting us know about this. Is a community leader in South Los Angeles who has sparked a food revolution by converting unused urban areas into community gardens growing healthy local foods. This is what I needed when I was a kid. I needed to get my hands on actual food and dirt and not be afraid of it and not think that S&W green beans grew in cans on trees or whatever it was that I thought. 826-4805. We're talking about food and film and stuff like that. The three E's. You're right. Economy, environment, and what's the third? No, I'm not doing a Rick Perry. And equity. So they're each vital ingredients in the sustainable food system, according to your website. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Would you like to do that, Josh? Nope.
He doesn't want to. Just read a little bit here. Communities can embrace unique and vibrant political, economic, and cultural facets in their bioregion's food system. This includes identifying, bringing together, and collaborating with local government, businesses, education entities, and the agricultural community, food advocacy groups, culinary art programs, food markets, educational and religious entities, nonprofits, and medical communities. And it goes on to discuss building a healthy environment dependent on a sustainable food system with biodiversity. That all sounds pretty good.
That's it.
Oh, okay. So where do the three E's come in?
Well, the three E's, as we mentioned, starting with economy. In order to do this, we need to keep our money in our community. In other words, when you have a large corporate giant that is providing food, we get very little money back into the community from that. And most of the food is, quite frankly, almost all of it, is not from here. So when you keep money, when we keep money in our community, we're able to spend it wisely, put it into schools, put it into research, you know, whatever it is, but it stays here. And that is what makes a community strong economically. So that's one of the important keys.
So being a locavore actually strengthens your economy and hence your community.
Yes, absolutely. And then the other thing is environment. And so far, we have been able to, in this community, well, I should say in the county, kept our land from developers. I mean, I'm not against developers, but I think we, first of all, need to know that we have... Anybody needs to know that they have enough land to grow food. I mean, that's what it was like, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, where everything was local. And that is one of the keys. So right now, at this point in time, we have young people that are buying or renting property to grow food and it's keeping the environment clean because it's organic. And I don't know, you guys might want to chime in on this. No? Okay.
Well, I can speak to students' experience because that's primarily where I work, but I know that there are students who, there's a big movement to get food growing on our campus, and how do we get different departments involved and having different plots, and, you know, there's community gardens that are at the dorms, and I think that this is just because students are forward thinking and they're thinking about how do we use the land that we have that's available to us here, these resources, to be able to create access to more healthy foods. And I think it's pretty exciting. I mean, another thing I wanted to say about students, too, why we're hosting the first local screening is we want new students who are coming into this community to know where their food comes from, to feel like that they can jump in and have a place to, you know, be active in their local food community, whether it's joining like the Food Policy Council or volunteering at Food for People or getting a job at Wildberries or working for the farmers market or doing CalFresh outreach. And I think that helping people understand their food system helps bring community together, because food is something that we all need. And these gardens bring people together. Meals around tables bring people together. And this is an important piece where, you know, you can think about equity. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about the dinners that you're going to be doing, but that is bringing students and local families together around food.
Right. We have a... special project that's actually happening Sunday. And we're bringing community members together with students, specifically, I would say, the younger ones that don't quite know the situation here. And so there's a big potluck, and it's to introduce students to our community. And so that's just, again, one way of being able to reach out and to make the community stronger. And that's kind of what basically all of us that are involved in this project are about. And we're very passionate about it. I mean, almost everybody on this project is not getting paid.
And all these things are interrelated, right? Like we've been sort of discussing, and that I think that's kind of the essence of the three E's, as it were. And the, you know, the old Venn diagram for sustainability included the similar components, and in some ways this is just different language for the social, environmental, and the economic sort of model, the classic model of sustainability that came out after the 1986 Brundtland Report. But, you know, the, all these connections that, that Susan and Jen are talking about, culture revolves around a lot of things, right? Like language and values and food. And I can't think of a single family gathering event, like a family reunion or a party or any type of a celebration where food isn't maybe even the centerpiece, if not a very integral component. So what Suze is talking about is launching this new initiative to just try to break down some of these barriers between the community and the university, that kind of classic town gown phenomenon, and food is the right way to do it. And it's wonderful that she and some of her colleagues are taking that initiative to kind of welcome students from disparate locations all over the state of California and maybe elsewhere to hear. You know, and one other thing that I wanted to say is a lot of social scientific research has demonstrated that a positive connection to place is a pretty important predictor to individual behavioral choices in terms of how people relate to their environment. And so one of the ways that we can foster a positive place-based attitude is toward getting people connected to food and through food to the earth, to the water, to the air around them. And so, you know, talking about, like you were, Kevin, growing up with everything being processed and ultra-processed and canned, and there's still, right, I mean, this growing trend of sort of dissociation from our food. And we want to try to reverse that. I mean, we've got something really unique here where people do feel that connection. The grains, you know, from Beck's Bakery, that you can actually taste some of the soil trace elements. Not everybody has that ability or appreciation for the ability to access those micronutrients and how that really connects you in a very deep way with the land and the place where you are. And then maybe eventually that can start to transform other things and people too, their attitudes toward other types of pro-environmental and social behaviors, trust building, right? And this, the annual seed exchange that we have here through the local permaculture guild. It's just another example that we make that connection on the website. The cultural facet of the community food system is so important.
So a lot of things, thematic threads of community building do sort of emanate outward from food. We did a whole show here about permaculture. We had Shane Keller, who has that amazing house over there in Buttermilk Lane. It's this permaculture house. And it absolutely fascinates me. It's kind of like a machine. I mean, it started with food, and they're doing things over there I've never seen before. It's really quite evolved. But then I know other people who've gotten into this, too. They build a little dome greenhouse, a tube, you know, with the tubes and the thing. And then it gets in, well, I need gray water. So they set up a gray water system, you know. And then, well, my energy, I need, maybe I can do solar or, you know, even small hydros. So, you know, it becomes a thing, you know. Hey, well, I'm kind of fascinated by them, although I don't subscribe to them. These whole new meal kit services. Are you aware of those? Like Blue Apron and no. HelloFresh? You subscribe to this thing and it comes in a refrigerator. It sounds like an energy sinkhole to me. Well, it comes in this insulated package to your door and it's all the ingredients and they're all each wrapped in a plastic bag. Oh, the idea is it gets you to cook again, but then you just dispose of all this. Do you guys have any opinions about this? It's a multi-billion dollar. In fact, Amazon is starting it now.
Well, so, I would be totally against it because I think all of us would like to be able to do zero waste to the extent that we can. I mean, sometimes it's not possible.
I think now that Amazon has purchased Whole Foods, we might be seeing a little
bit
more of this.
I just thought about that, Jeff Bezos, he also owns Blue Origin, so he's taking us to space, too. He's one of these benign billionaires.
That makes sense to me, though, that there might be a lot of people living in urban areas who are attached to this idea of having fresh food and recipes sent to them. Everybody's busy, everybody's working, everybody has too much to do, which is where convenient food has played a big role in our lives. And so I do see that those meals are filling a need. But I think that there are other ways to be thinking about how to fill that need. Mm-hmm. And some of those ways we're talking about here, and even thinking about, like, you know, the gangsta gardening, or, you know, the community gardens wherever we go, or being able to have access to these kinds of foods in the stores that are near you, you know. So, I mean, that makes sense to me.
It fills a niche, like Jen is saying, right? I mean, it gets people to return to traditions of being in the kitchen and actually preparing their own food.
It seems like that's about it, because the sheer amount of energy involved in shipping millions of these chilled kits with all the packaging.
I totally agree. It's kind of atomized, and it's also, you know, in virtue of the fact that it's atomized, it's sort of detracting from community rather than building it. And so, you know, instead of getting people out in the into the community to this, for instance, the community garden, or connecting with growers through the farmers market or the CSA, or even their neighbors and exchanging heirloom seeds that they've saved, it's a very different trajectory, and I think it has some pros. But in terms of the energy waste.
Somebody could make them locally, something like that. 826-4805, if you have a question or comment about food or the film, Locally Grown, America's New Food Revolution.
Suzanne. Kevin, I just wanted to bring this up.
And I just want to say that you are kind of resemble an eggplant tonight. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, am I round and fat and
purple? You're just purple.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And seeing you makes me happy.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And you're shiny. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, my God. Where's my powder?
You're a happy, shiny person. But you were saying, or attempting to say.
So what I was asking was, so this food, maybe I missed it. This packaged food comes in. Is it fresh and organic?
It is. I think it's mostly organic, or a lot of it is. But there's different themes. Some are exclusively organic. There's vegetarian ones. But you can sign up. It's kind of diabolical. I mean, if you look at Blue Apron or HelloFresh, there's a lot of them. I mean, there's at least a dozen or two dozen of them now. Yeah, and you can sign up for whatever kind of stuff. You can go vegetarian or vegan or, you know, you can whatever. You can. And they come with all these menus with pictures of the final meal. I think the idea is to get people back in the kitchen. So there is that.
Well, that would be good, but it certainly is counterproductive in terms of not getting. I mean, look, we go to the co-op, we go to Wildberries, you know, Safeway, wherever we go. Generally, we see people we know, and so we stop and talk. And that's part of the food thing, too.
And you do that at the CSAs, too, when you go to pick up your box.
So it's a return to food, which is really important, but it's not a return to people or place, right? And so it's missing some of those elements of a more holistic food system, I would say.
And I think it's a further disconnect, too, like, from where does your food come from and where do we grow it? And when we're thinking about environment and thinking about, like, you know, where your food comes from, that leads you to, like, a respect for the land and knowing that that's the place that produces your food, and starting to think long term about what are we doing to our land, what are we doing to our water. This is where our food comes from. But when you get it in a box or you get it in a store, you're not making those connections. And I know that because I grew up in a city and I did not make those connections, and neither did you with your canned beans growing on trees. And so I think, like you're saying, it moves us away from community. It moves us away from our earth. It moves us away from having a meaningful connection.
You know, I remember in the 70s, to get food that didn't suck, you had to go to the health food store. And I remember looking at the wretched produce section and just thinking, oh, I would never eat that stuff. It was, there really wasn't, you know, the infrastructure that we have today. And it was very arcane, niche.
Well, it was dead food.
Yeah. 826-4805. The time is drawing close. But we're still talking about Locally Grown, America's New Food Revolution, which you can go see Saturday at 4:00 at the Native Forum on Humboldt State Campus. So we're talking about food as a sort of a way to catalyze community and the economy and your health and things like that.
I would add in too that this is a way to connect to culture and getting back to, you know, your own roots and where food comes from in your family and being able to bring that to the table to share, because that's a big part of what food means for people. I don't know if you want to jump in on that. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's the whole Foodways movement is sort of just exactly what you're saying. And, you know, as a rhetorical scholar, my background is studying the discourse of food ideologies and movements and policies. And so I'm fairly conversant with a lot of these different kinds of food-based movements globally that have sprung up over the last, say, half a century. And organic agriculture actually has a really interesting prehistory dating back to the East Indian Tea Company, but and the origins of composting. But the cultural relationship with foodstuffs is really what the cultural studies scholars are looking at in terms of foodways and ethnicity and identity and how we kind of start to construct our identities based on our interrelationships with people in place and the food that is the kind of the mediator through which we connect with people in place, right? And so, and how that shapes how we perceive ourselves and how others perceive us. And, you know, there's been a lot of really interesting stuff in relationship to that, like wine culture, for instance, versus microbreweries versus artisanal cheeses and so forth. In lots of different parts of the world, those are pretty important elements of cultural identity, and people sort of feel a strong sense of pride and connection to their past and to family and even ancestors. And there's some mythos built up around that, and especially some Latin American cultures.
This just in, Maureen McGarry is letting us know that Potawatt is looking for volunteers for harvesting vegetables on Tuesday and Friday mornings. Call 825-5000 and ask for T and Ed. T is a person. That's her name, T. And or Ed. And it's 825-5000. So that's the Potawatt Gardens that we've been talking about. If you're looking to get your hands dirty and maybe get into this whole wonderful food thing, there's a good way to do it, 825-5000, and volunteer there. But there's other, in fact, CCAT right here on the campus, they do a lot of food things, right?
Right.
Campus Center for Appropriate Technology, look them up. They do all kinds of stuff, and not just food either, but sustainable, innovative, appropriate technology type stuff.
I just want to go back to Potawatt. If anybody wants to go out and have a wonderful time harvesting and working at Potawatt as a volunteer, it is amazing. And the people out there are just fantastic. And I've done some volunteering out there myself, and it's a great experience. So any of you that want to get your hands dirty, jump on that telephone number and call and sign up.
May I just say, all the CSAs around here are great. I love them. I love all of them. Redwood Roots out there is just, it's like paradise. And then Ed's thing out here, I can't remember the names off the top of my head. But look into the local CSAs. You'll have a deep-seated community farm. And then there's Bayside Park Farm, too, which used to be the Arcata Community Farm. That was the first one I ever went to. And when you get into this, you'll also maybe get into composting and, like I say, gray water and all these other related things. It's really quite endless when you get into permaculture.
It is.
And it's got its own culture, too. So did we exhaust the three E's we talked about?
Well, to go back to the website just momentarily, you know, which is kind of where we're focusing our discourse on the three E's, I just wanted to mention that there are a lot of great resources, informational resources, you know, public education sort of tools through these virtual field guides that we've all sort of collaboratively created and written. And the one thing that I wanted to mention is with the education guides, for instance, you know, these are things that we're trying to build into not only getting different audiences to think critically about what they're doing. There's a whole spectrum of being advanced with your sustainability practices and values, right, in relationship to food and everything else. But particularly with food, you know, we're seeing more and more of this traction, the farm to table, the school gardens and so on and so forth. what are these different organizations doing in different communities? You have to, like you were saying, do it, Kevin, do a needs assessment and kind of identify what your assets and resources are, and possibly even underutilized or not utilized resources that you have available, which is a way to kind of tap into this collaborative synergy that is just they're waiting in a lot of communities.
You know what's underutilized? Lawns. Why do we have lawns? I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a tangent. But I see all these lawns. They're not producing anything. They just make you spend energy on them, you know, to mow them and you know, pesticides and things.
And the water.
And the water consumption. Mm-hmm. Why do we have... I don't understand why we have them. Doesn't either.
It's a weird history with royalty, actually, in the old world. And it's sort of this vestige of having this sort of imperial display. Yeah. Look, I can grow grass, and it's totally useless, and it's aesthetic? Not really, compared to a vibrant, integrative, organic, edible landscape, you know, right?
Look at Shane's house. I think it's on the corner of Beverly and Buttermilk, and you'll see how much more beautiful it is to have it producing colorful, beautiful food than it is this green. Some people don't agree about this, but I invite them to disagree.
And as
arable, here's one thing that I think about is, you know, food independence, and I mean, the economy's doing okay now. It's not going to always be that way. At some point, we might want to think about food independence. But whenever I see all these lawns, I think, wow, we do have that. I mean, when it comes down to it, we could turn all those into gardens.
But it doesn't happen overnight, right? And that's why it's a process. And just like growing a single sunflower or tomato is a process, you can't just overnight become an effective cultivator, even with the climatic amenities that we have here in Humboldt County. And so that's why, you know, I encourage people to just get involved immediately, right? I mean, there is a kind of urgency around it. And if you start doing this stuff like you're saying, it sort of flows out into this unpredictable web of other types of insights and relationships and behaviors you're going to develop.
Let's call it a casual urgency. We have Dan from Arcata on the line. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling Thursday
Night
Talk.
I just want to thank you guys for the program. It's been really good. And while listening to it, I harvested 2 pounds of bush beans out of my backyard. My wife harvested strawberries. I caught some crookneck squash. So it's very, very nice to listen to stuff about growing local food while picking food that's so local it's about 50 feet from my back door.
Wow. Dan's living the dream. He's a fully realized community gardener.
Yes, I'm going to come and I'm going to be a community consumer and eat those green beans tonight.
Yummy. Jen has a question for you.
Hey, Dan. Sounds like you're having a good time out there. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you started growing your own food.
I think it started with an artichoke years and years ago. Someone said, here, these are easy to grow, and it turns out they are. A little bit of food, a little bit of water, mostly water with artichokes, and I got food, and then I started to learn a little bit more. Now I'm challenged by things like powdery mildew on my squash, but I have organic means of dealing with that or knocking it back a little bit. So, it's one of those things that is imminently rewarding. If you put a little bit of effort into it, you get something back that is just incredible.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, this is Suzanne. Do you have kale and chard and collard greens and celery in your garden?
I do not. Right now, we've got some broccoli, we've got Romanesco, the aforementioned artichokes, we've got lettuce, spinach, shallots, strawberries, bush beans, cherry tomatoes, and 4 kinds of peppers in the greenhouse.
Oh, my God. That sounds fantastic, because a lot of people really shy away from the, you know, the things, the brassicas like broccoli and collard greens and kale and things like that. But those are really wonderful staples for you to have, especially in the winter. And those are things that you can plant right now and harvest.
Agreed. We've got half of a bed that's empty that we'll get another round of broccoli and the Romanesco. The thing with those originally, I thought I tried growing some and I was determined, or the first crop was bad. This did not work out. I was learning about that particular plant, and I thought, I'm just going to let the professionals grow my broccoli, because we have some amazing farmers around here that grow amazing broccoli.
Yeah, right.
But with a little bit of work and a nice big bottle of neem oil and a few other goodies and food, we now grow store quality broccoli right in the backyard.
Well, all that right. is
Dan,
fantastic.
Thanks for calling Thursday Night Talk. So this is about it. We've had a vivid discussion, and I want to remind you, you can go see Locally Grown, America's New Food Revolution, this Saturday, this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Native Forum on Humboldt State University. And then next February, you can see the Gangsta Gardener. That's Ron Finley. That's Tuesday, February 13th at 7 p.m. He's establishing gardens in urban settings. If he can do it, you can do it. I'd like to thank all of our guests on Thursday Night Talk. We've had Josh Fry, Suzanne Simpson, Jen McGuire. Thanks to Dan in Arcata, who is a fully realized gardener and individual role model for us all. Liz in Arcata, who I'm sure is too. As is Geraldine, our producer, and Katie Whiteside, our engineer. So this is Kevin Hoover, editor-at-large of the Mad River Union. Thank you for joining us on Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you, Kevin.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk right here on KHSU. And thanks to our host, Kevin Hoover. And